How to surrender to Krishna every moment. That was the question. How to surrender to Krishna every moment. And how can one lead a dharmic way of life being a grihastha? I'm a sannyasi, I wouldn't know about those things. How to surrender to Krishna every moment. Well, I was thinking on the way over here. One element of how to surrender to Krishna every moment requires being surrendered to the representative of Krishna every moment. Because the first question is not dharma, the first question is surrender. And surrender is beyond, way beyond dharma. When you're when you're attached to someone or something, you constantly think of that someone or that something. But surrender is more than it's there's an element in surrender that's more than just being attached to someone or something. You know, a miser is attached to his money. So the miser is always thinking of his money. He's not exactly surrendered to his money. He just wants to have it, control it, enjoy it, but not surrender. So surrender indicates recognition of some power or an entity or a person or something that is greater than me and I'm dependent upon. I'm not independent. I'm dependent. Just like this little child here is dependent. But the little child is pulling daddy's nose and pulling daddy's ear and not exactly surrendered. So surrender is more than just recognizing I'm dependent. Desire to be in service, essentially. So the desire to be in service is constitutional for the soul, and at every moment, as your question is addressing, every moment we're engaged in service. The mother is serving the daughter. Any relationship that we have. And there's so many abundant relationships. The relationships that we have are relationships of service. And we're always engaged in service. Ultimately, that service is to Krishna. But we're covered by illusion. And the first element of illusion is false ego. So to be always, at every moment, surrender to Krishna requires no false ego. Say it the opposite. As long as false ego is operating, we're not going to be surrendered to Krishna, but even for a moment. Or it may appear that we're surrendering to Krishna when there's a calamity. And when the calamity is over, see you later, Krishna. So that's not really surrender to Krishna, that's utilitarian. There's an element of surrender, but it's not full surrender to Krishna. So let's go to Padma Purana. In Padma Purana, it describes, it's quoted in a number of places in scripture. It references there's six limbs or angas of surrender. So we'll just go through them and see how that connects with how to be surrendered to Krishna at every moment. These angas, they're symptoms of surrender. And that is, there's some opportunity to do something that will help you remember Krishna and be positively, favorably engaged in serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. And you accept that. And something is an obstruction or an obstacle in pleasing Krishna, you reject that. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Rakshishatiti vishvaso. Seeing Krishna as one's protector. Seeing Krishna as one's maintainer. Seeing Krishna as one's dearmost friend. And always using everything in full self-surrender unto Krishna. Those are symptoms or characteristics of surrender. But there's something that's at the heart or essence of that. That's dasya. That's accepting, I am meant for serving Krishna. So that's a concept that's spiritual. It frees one, it liberates one from false ego. There's the potency in that rasa of dasya rasa. Let me be engaged in service to Krishna. Because it's naturally who I am. I'm emphasizing like this because your next question has to do with dharma. And as I mentioned, surrender is beyond dharma, as the Bhagavad Gita indicates. Sarva dharmam prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. To go beyond the principles of dharma, one takes shelter of surrender unto Krishna. And then when you're surrendered unto Krishna, because this is kind of answering the second part of your question, how one can lead a dharmic way of life being a grihastha. How to lead a dharmic way of life as a grihastha. The principles of varna and ashram dharma are very detailed. I'll just keep it very simple and say, as a grihastha, there's a section that's quoted in Bhagavad Gita where there grihasthas are required, according to the codes of dharma, to perform many, 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 many different types of sacrifice. One of them is mentioned in the purport in Bhagavad Gita that Jiva Goswami discusses in his Tattva Sandarbha. Every day, as a grihastha, there's living entities their lives are being expended just by your existing as a grihastha, just by your existing. By lighting fire, living entities are giving up their lives. By sweeping the floor, living entities are giving up their lives. So there's five different kinds of sacrifices that every grihastha is supposed to perform every day. The way that, just to keep it again simple, Prabhupada said if we followed very strictly the codes of dharma for a grihastha, you'd barely get out of bed. And you spend the whole day just doing so many duties and so many duties and so many duties and so many duties, you wouldn't have time to do anything. Therefore, in this age of Kali, it's made very simple. The primary duty of sacrifice is Nama Sankirtan. It's made very simple for this age of Kali. Besides, the qualified brahmanas to perform the sacrifices are hard to find. So, how one can lead a dharmic way of life being a grihastha starts with the first question, being in one's relationship with Krishna, that's awakened by the primary means of awakening your relationship with, of service with Krishna. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra means, O energy of Krishna, Hara, please engage me in the service of Krishna. It's an appeal, it's a universal appeal for reawakening the dormant propensity for being in service to Krishna. So, that's how to surrender to Krishna at every moment, is be connected with that mood of service to Krishna. Then you're surrendered to Him. You're not just being dharmic, because you can, one can perform varnashram duties, varna and ashram duties, and not be surrendered. Some of you may be familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyone unfamiliar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, have not heard of the book? It's a biography, very lengthy biography of the life of Lord Chaitanya. And there are five sections in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is directly instructing. He instructs Rupa Goswami, he instructs Sanatana Goswami, he instructs Amayavad Sannyasi, Prakashananda Saraswati in Benares. He instructs Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the chief priest of the king of Orissa, Prataparudra. And then there's another section, the fifth, where Chaitanya is having a dialogue with Ramananda Roy on the goal of life and the means to achieve it. So one of the suggestions that Ramananda Roy makes about the goal of life and how to achieve it, as he says, the perfect execution of varna and ashram duties. And he quotes a verse from Vishnu Purana, which describes whatever your situation is, you should engage in the codes of dharma. If you're grihastha, engage in grihastha dharma. If you're sannyasi, engage in sannyas dharma. If you're a brahmachari, engage in brahmachari dharma, and so forth. And Lord Chaitanya says it's external. It's a means to become attached to Krishna, to come to the position of being attached to Krishna or being surrendered to Krishna, but it's not the essence. It's assisting, but it's external. The essence is the essence. And the manifestation of that is an external manifestation, performing of prescribed duties. The essence is being surrendered to Krishna. And by being surrendered to Krishna means being in Krishna's service. And being in Krishna's service then is the medium for knowing Krishna. Because he says that in Bhagavad Gita also. There's one way to know Krishna, and that's by medium of devotional service. So our situation, it's a good question, because our situation is alternatively like vacillating, sometimes surrendered, sometimes not. In Bhagavad Gita, there's a nice verse. Krishna speaks of Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, Mam Chayovya Vicharina, Bhakti Yogena Sevate, Sagunan Samatityaitan, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Nice verse. Where Avyabhichari Bhakti, Mam Chayo Vyabhicharina Bhakti Yogena Sevate. When one is engaged in undivided devotional service, Sagunan Samatityaitan, one transcends the modes of nature. Because the modes of nature, they're acting on the conditioned soul, and sometimes it's this mode, and sometimes it's that mode, and sometimes the other mode, and sometimes changing. So even if the external is changing, that the regardless of one's embodiment and what's happening at any given moment because of our particular embodiment, the power of devotion to Krishna and being fixed in his loving service can carry one beyond the modes of nature. That's what the verse is saying. When it once comes to the level of Brahman, but one can then slacken in that surrender to Krishna or submission to Krishna. And if you slacken in your surrender to Krishna or submission to Krishna, Maya becomes more powerful, more acts more powerfully in your life. The previous tendency for karma and the modes of nature become more prevalent. It's the opposite. The more one is engaged in service to Krishna and in the mood of surrender to Krishna, the less active it is. The modes of nature and your previous karma. So the question again, how to at every moment be in a position of surrender to Krishna? Be surrendered to the representatives of Krishna. There isn't another channel, and those representatives of Krishna, to surrender to them means when you're eager to hear their message and you take their message to heart and you act accordingly. You live your life governed by that message that's now being carried in your heart. That's attachment to and in the position of surrender to the representative of Krishna. And then that's how you become at every moment surrender to Krishna. Is that clear? Let's do it the other way. Supposing the representative of Krishna isn't in the picture, and you want to be surrendered at every moment to Krishna. It's not going to happen. Krishna says, an often quoted section from Adi Purana, similar to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking to Arjuna in Adi Purana. And Krishna says to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee, he's not my devotee. One who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. Krishna holds one more dear to him who is pleasing his devotee than one who is trying to please Krishna without pleasing his devotee. In fact, there's no such thing as pleasing Krishna without pleasing Krishna's devotee. There's no question of becoming or being at every moment surrendered to Krishna, and there's no Krishna's devotee in the picture. No such thing. So how to live one's life as a grihastha, leading a dharmic way of life, depends on the first one. You can do that properly. And if you're fully surrendered to Krishna. And because there's always going to be some discrepancy. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, every endeavor is covered with some fault. The Bhagavad Dharma teaches us the essence is not the detail. The detail is the detail, and the essence is the essence. That is to say, becoming attached to Krishna is the essence. Knowing Krishna is the essence. That's what Krishna says. The purpose of all the Vedas is to know Krishna. Vedaishta sayavair aham eva vedyo Vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. The purpose of all the Vedas is to know Krishna. And how can one know Krishna? By devotional service to Krishna. It's very simple. Very simple. So how to lead the dharmic life as a grihastha? Well, you follow the dharma of a grihastha, but as I mentioned, it's so complicated to do all the dharmas for grihastha. You wouldn't be able to. In this age of Kali, we're not able to. Too many. Our lives are already filled with so many duties and complications, and it's not possible. Therefore, the essence, to do so, the essence must be there, surrender to Krishna. Indeed. So, do each of the things that you do as a service to Krishna. Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurasho madarpanam. Bhagavad Gita holds all these messages, but in Bhagavad Dharma, I've just... last week, Monday through, just like here, Monday through Thursday, I was in St. Louis and we were discussing the life of Queen Kunti and the beginning part of Queen Kunti's prayers. Very, very inspiring section of the Bhagavatam. Very famous, Kunti's prayers. So there are two sections that we were discussing in Kunti's life where there's quite a difference between the Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll say what they are, and it follows the topic that we're just now discussing. In Mahabharata, how did Queen Kunti disappear? How did she conclude her pastime? In Mahabharata, it says that Queen Kunti followed Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, and there was a big fire in the forest, and all of them were burned in the fire in the forest. That's what it says in Mahabharata. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, it says that Kunti followed her sons. So according to the Mahabharata, the Pandavas, how did they end after Krishna left? Because, as just mentioned, there were some discrepancies, each one of the five, so they had to see hell because of those discrepancies in Dharma, and then he went to Swargaloka. They ascended into heaven. The Bhagavatam says, when Krishna left, they are so attached to Krishna, in their self-same bodies, they went and joined Krishna. Big difference, isn't it? Big difference. Because Mahabharata is placing emphasis primarily on codes of Dharma, virtue, as opposed to its opposite. The good and evil struggle. But there are three sections within Mahabharata that are particularly transcendental, according to Jiva Goswami and our acharyas. One is Bhagavad Gita, where Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mamekam Shananam Braja. The essence is to surrender to Krishna. And what happens when you surrender to Krishna? If there's some discrepancy in your execution of Dharma, Krishna will take care of that. That's the other half of the verse. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami masuchaha. So, to execute your duties as a grahastha, according to the codes of Dharma, make sure that you're surrendered to Krishna. And how to make sure that you're surrendered to Krishna? Become attached to Krishna in the mood of serving Him. How to achieve that? Mahamantra is the means to achieve that. In this age of Kali, it's really simple. In this age of Kali, what does the Bhagavatam tell us about the age of Kali? Kalir dosha nahe rajan. It's an ocean of dosha, an ocean of fault. Prayena payushak shabya kalavasmin yugejana mandak samanda matayo manda bhagya yupadrita. Even if you don't know what Sanskrit is, it doesn't sound good. All good qualities are practically destroyed to nil. Good qualities. It leaves the other kind. Bad qualities. And manda means bad. Manda, sumanda matayo, manda bhagya yupadrita. Manda, over and over again. The inclination for spiritual life, manda. The quality of compassion, sumanda. Duration of life, diminished. All auspiciousness is diminished. And above all, everyone is disturbed, ready to quarrel over nothing. Age of Kali. And when people are engaged in quarrel, higher purpose of life is forgotten. You just get all entangled in whatever the issue is about you're quarreling over. And who's going to win? It's so unpleasant. It's debilitating for spiritual well-being. Therefore, the sages of Naimisharanya ask Sutta Goswami to explain the essence of all religious scriptures so people can easily access it. That which awakens loving devotion toward Krishna is the essence. And in hearing about Krishna, hearing Krishna's name and hearing Krishna's qualities, and so it's just like we're doing this evening. Or the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam does. It awakens that dormant propensity for service to Krishna. And then, as a grahastha, you can carry out your duties. Now, I thought to say, I was asked a different question. He just needs a maha mantra and then he'll become a great kirtaniya. Okay, so some years ago, I don't know, a lot of years ago, I was visiting in Houston, and there was a newly forming congregational group, and of course, primarily grahastha. So I was asked for 4 days in a row to speak on one topic, you know, the duties of grahastha. Because your question is a little different, but you know, what are the duties of grahastha? So I researched, and over and over and over and over, the primary duty of a grahastha is to be charitable. There are different ways that that's expressed, but it's, you know, the theme of a grahastha. So that's a dharmic principle. You can be charitable as a grihastha and be misguided, or be attached to the piety that will come back to you from being charitable, so that you become the enjoyer of that charitableness, which is not, you know, the essence of the duty of anything. Be the enjoyer of the fruits of your good work. That's karma. It could be pious karma, but then there's bondage to pious karma as there is to any other kind of karma. So therefore, like Bhagavad Gita teaches, there's charity in the modes of nature. And there's, you know, the modes of nature operating with everything in life. So for grihastha also. Charity in the mode of ignorance, charity in the mode of passion, charity in the mode of goodness. The proper dharma is to know how to repose that charitableness. And ultimately, in the mood of surrender to Krishna, that which is going to enhance remembrance of Krishna for me and for others. That's the best charity. There's different ways to do that. But one of the principal ways is by giving charity to qualified brahmanas and qualified Vaishnavas. That's an essential, because those qualified brahmanas and Vaishnavas, they know how to please Krishna. And they'll utilize whatever that is for service to Krishna. Prabhupada explained that the weight is pretty heavy. There are four brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, four ashrams. And one of them is to maintain all four of them. The brahmachari is not supposed to have income. And the sannyasi is certainly not supposed to have income. And the vanaprastha is completed their life as a grihastha, and now they're also to be, you know, in an elderly stage of life, to be maintained. So who's maintaining them? There's only one left. That's the grihastha. I mean, one does that for one's family, the husband or the father, or in some cases the father and the mother. They're earning and they're maintaining the family members. But then there's those outside of the family members that a dharmic grihastha is to be engaged in maintaining. I'll tell a little Prabhupada story. There's one godbrother who lived many years as a brahmachari distributing books, and a stage of life came for him where he understood it was suited for him to become a grihastha. So Prabhupada performed his wedding. And the day after the wedding, he was going to go back to the place where he came from with his newly married wife. And so in a morning walk, he wanted to take the opportunity to ask Prabhupada what is his duty as a grihastha. This is dharma now. It's not surrender. It's just duty. So, you know, morning walk is beginning, and they're leaving the temple, going to head towards the park or the place where the walk was going to take place. And this devotee said, Prabhupada, now that I'm married, could you tell me what is my duty as a grihastha? And Prabhupada said, your duty as a grihastha is, before you take your meal, you go to the door and call out three times, is there anyone who has not taken their meal yet? Please come have your meal. So the devotee thought, I don't think Prabhupada understood my question. So they went, you know, they had the rest of the morning walk, and just before getting back to the temple, he asked the question again. And he got exactly the same answer again. So it stuck. And I was one time narrating this story, just like I'm with group of you now, and somebody in the audience started to wail, like out loud. I thought maybe, you know, they were having a medical problem or something. I said, "Are you all right?" And he said, "What you're saying is completely true." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "My father used to do that. In the village where I lived, every day before taking his meal, my father would go to the door and call out three times, 'Is there anyone who's not taken the meal? Please come.' And even if nobody came, sometimes people came, but even if nobody came, he would wait because there was an elder sadhu. And he would not take his meal until the elder sadhu had taken his meal, then he would take his meal." I said, "That's very nice." He said, "Yes, it's very nice, but I went back to my village and nobody does that. And that same sadhu, he's neglected. He's very elderly, he can't take care of him." He was like emotional. Dharma's gone. So if you go out in a neighborhood like this and call out three times, nothing's going to happen. So what does it mean? How do you apply that principle? It's a principle of being charitable. So some part of what you do as a gahasta is meant for the benefit of others. And so there are different ways of doing that. But at least the principle is, as a grahasta, be charitable. Now, add the first question. In such a way that you're at every moment surrendered to Krishna. So then it means you want to know what kind of charity does Krishna want you to do as a grahasta, or whatever the circumstances of your life. If you're a student, you have some young people here who are students. How do you be a student where you're at every moment surrendered to Krishna? And whatever life situation brings your way, how to act in that position of that everything in this material, the purpose of creation is to give us an opportunity to perfect our lives in loving devotion to Krishna. It can be seen the other way, and that is, you know, an opportunity to be an enjoyer of the facilities of creation. And that's another way to look at what the purpose of creation is. But if the mood of service, you won't see like that. You'll see opportunities for service. So associate with esgrahastas, associate with those who you know have that mood of service, regardless of their ashram, those that have the mood of service to Krishna, those who are attached to Krishna. And one of the best ways to do that is read Prabhupada's books. Because there's one person you know is fully attached to Krishna. There's one during a period of time of the very famous or infamous Beatles, they were very interested in Eastern philosophy or Eastern way of spirituality. So of course amongst them, George Harrison, became a devotee. There's a little story. George Harrison wanted to take initiation from Prabhupada. His personal servant described this. I've not seen it recorded and transcribed anywhere, but he asked Prabhupada if he would accept him as a disciple. And Prabhupada gave him the reply, "You just serve Krishna the way that you're serving Krishna. You can bring millions of people to devotional service to Krishna. Use your talent and your fame and that gift that Krishna has given you in Krishna's service. That's all you need to do. And chant Hare Krishna." He's very attached to Krishna through the association of Prabhupada. So one time, John Lennon had invited Prabhupada to stay at his, whatever you call it, his place, at his estate, that's the language. So, there's a recorded conversation where John Lennon is doing the main questioning. His good wife, Yoko Ono, is also in a very challenging mood asking the same question. Over and over, the same question. The question was, whose translation of Bhagavad Gita is the best translation to read? Everyone claims that they have the answer. You know, their translation is the best. Everyone says the same thing. So how do we know? And Prabhupada was giving different answers and different answers, and they kept coming back to the same question because they couldn't hear. But very clearly, at one point, Prabhupada said, you say that you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then a pause. Like, I know you don't. But you say that you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who's going to know a person best? The words of a person are going to be known by the one who knows that person. So if you find somebody that is always speaking about Krishna, they're thinking of Krishna, they're acting for Krishna, their whole life is Krishna, 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 that person is going to know Krishna. And that person can explain to you the meaning of Krishna's words. So find such persons as grihasthas, who you know, you see visibly, their life is simply Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Whatever age they are, whatever ashram they're in, whatever their situation is. Those are persons that will help you as a grihastha become surrendered at every moment to Krishna through association. That's an answer to your question. And practically speaking, they'll encourage you to do those things that will enhance your surrender to Krishna, like awakening the desire to be in Krishna's service through chanting. Attachment to those persons and eager for that association will bring one to the position of being surrendered to Krishna at every moment. And one of the primary duties of a grihastha is being charitable. There's many other things, but one of the obvious requirements of a grihastha is that you're in contact with the man is in contact with the woman is in contact with the man. That's what grihastha life is. That which can agitate the mind most is money and the opposite sex. And being in close contact with money and the opposite sex can easily agitate the mind. You can't think of Krishna when your mind is agitated. So to see money as meant for Krishna's service. And for husband to see the wife or wife to see the husband is not an individual who is going to facilitate my enjoyment, the object of enjoyment, or one who's going to provide the fulfillment of my desires. It's not to see like that, but to see as here's a spirit soul. Krishna has entrusted me with the association of this spirit soul in a very close way to assist one another in becoming freed from the material contamination by the spirit of serving Krishna together, assisting one another in that way. Then you can be a good grihastha by that spirit of mood of service to Krishna in terms of wealth and in terms of the companionship of husband and wife. And then, of course, the byproduct, the children, and seeing the opportunity of being a parent is assisting the spirit soul. Of course, there's different needs according to the different ages of growing child, but see to the soul along with the needs of the body and the mind, and how the soul can be connected to Krishna. But I can't do that as a parent if I'm not connected to Krishna. I'll either be the enjoyer or the sufferer of the circumstances of being a parent. And sometimes it's nice and sometimes it's not nice. But it's not meant for our enjoyment, it's meant for a service to Krishna. So there's some thoughts on your two questions. Let's see if there's any discussion on this. I flew here from Houston, and I arrived, but my luggage didn't. But this is a text message, I think, from the airlines telling me that they want to deliver my luggage, but I'm not home. So let me just see what it says. Any discussion? Yes?
Maharaj, you were mentioning that being charitable is one of the primary duties of Grahastha.
Yeah.
And currently, in the modern society, the thinking is just spending some money for these non-profit organizations or doing some welfare activities or giving education to others, the charity ends there. The conception of charity doesn't extend towards doing something good for the temples or the sadhus. So when I talk with my colleagues or my friends, they cannot even comprehend that concept of charity being on that level. For them, charity remains only at just doing these humanitarian activities or welfare activities. So what is the correct understanding of charity, of being charitable?
It's in Bhagavad Gita, correct understanding. I mean, even if one gives, the recipient is one of the criterion for proper or improper, and the consciousness behind the act is another, proper or improper consideration. So, most important is the recipient. That is to say, one can be charitable to a drunkard or that kind of a person. Now, what are they going to do with whatever that charity is that you give to them? You know, to feed their habit or whatever that is. So then someone else could say, well, you know, I won't just give them some money, but, you know, a place where they can live in dignity and a place where they can be clean and help them straighten out their lives and get a job and so forth. So like social work, humanitarian work, that kind of thing. That's a little bit better than just giving some money to a person who's going to misuse it. But it doesn't change the modes of nature. And it doesn't change the soul's implication in matter. So, standard of consciousness has to do with the recipient. So someone who can elevate that individual to Krishna consciousness. Something must be there that's along that line. I'll just give two examples. Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta both were very strong about not just doing charitable philanthropic work, opening hospitals. So like Mayavadis would go and, you know, do their whatever they do to achieve their whatever they want to achieve, and after some period of time come back from the mountain, so to speak, and go into the world and do charitable work. Because mana seva bhagavan seva, service to man is service to God. without God consciousness. So, supposing, on the other hand, like, for example, what the Bhaktivedanta Hospital has done. They not only give medical care, they give spiritual care. We invited the Bhaktivedanta Hospital director, Madhavananda, to make a presentation at our GBC meeting to explain not just the medical care that they give, but what are the ways in which they give spiritual care. And it's a huge bhakta program, without elaborating. The numbers of persons that are now initiated, the number of persons that are regularly studying Prabhupada's books and different study groups that just come from people that come into the hospital. What to speak of, the softer feelings of appreciation for Krishna and Krishna bhakti from people that are from all kinds of different backgrounds and religions. Huge uplift of spiritual consciousness. That kind of activity goes beyond philanthropic and charitable activity. Or I'll give another example, a very personal example. In the year 2010-2011, I was chairman of the GBC, serving in that role. And during that year was when that disaster happened in Haiti. So I was receiving messages from people around the world that I didn't even know who they were, because I'm the chairman of the GBC. Is there some way that we can help? We want to help. Is there some way that we can help? And nobody gave me a clue of what you're supposed to do when there's a disaster like that. But I had to do something. So there's no temple in Haiti, but there's a temple in Santo Domingo. I knew a devotee in Santo Domingo who was really good at organizing, and I asked him, would you be willing to have people contact you that want to help, and you can, assist, because Santo Domingo and Haiti are not so far away. So I said, sure. So I started directing people to him. And then circumstance, as it happened, I was passing through London my way to India, and I just met a whole group of devotees. There were like 15 of them heading for Haiti. And, we spent some time discussing what they were doing. One of them was, his skill was building homes from nothing in disaster places. They're like trained up in this. Some people were how to get medical facilities, some people clothing, and all those amenities that when people are smashed, you have to take care of. But at the same time, they brought a large number of books in French and instruments for kirtan. So when they were administering the food and giving the medicine and giving the clothing and helping to build houses, they were teaching them, the foundation of rebuilding their Krishna conscious life. For example. So those things that are helping persons in need, it's not that don't do that or only do that, but make sure that Krishna consciousness is there. It's very similar to family. Raising children and making sure they have a good education, making sure they have good medical care, and all things that conscientious parents do. It doesn't end there. It's, the essence of it is restoring their Krishna consciousness. And then extend that beyond the family into society. So, as you're describing people at work, they don't have that clear understanding. Because there isn't sufficient or proper spiritual education. Do this little experiment at work. Ask people two questions. Ask them, do you accept that there's a soul? And they'll say yes. And then you ask them, can you describe what a soul is? And you'll be surprised what you hear is a reply. There's zero understanding, or just, you know, some kind of concocted understanding. Then the next person has another understanding of it, because there really isn't some understanding. You speak with a deeply religious person and you'll be very surprised what they have to say about what the soul is. So, in short, awakening spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the soul, just as Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita, in a very clear, cogent way, about 2 weeks ago or so, maybe a little longer, there was a group from Holy Trinity College, something like that, came with their professor. He brought them. He wanted them to come. We got into this discussion about the soul, and it was amazing. He's the professor, and they're students of Holy Trinity College. Not being clear whether, other than humans, if there's a soul. And I asked specifically, I'm having this dialogue with, I was giving the morning class, and then asking, you know, in the discussion, asking this professor, do animals have a soul? And he said, you know, the Bible is silent on that. So, since the Bible is silent on that, we say there is no soul. One devotee was having a discussion with what's the high-ranking bishop above the bishop is?
Cardinal.
A cardinal. Do animals have a soul? And his answer was similar, but different. He said, the Bible is silent on it, so it's not important. Because it was important, the Bible would address it. It's not in the Bible. So it's not important, not even an important discussion. And then there's others that say there's animal souls and bird souls and tree souls. And that's it. I mean, there's all kinds of different ideas of... It's sad. So how can there be respect for life if you don't accept that there's even a soul present? This platitude, at best, cosmetic at best. You know, nature and other living beings other than humans. Anyway. So, charity is to give spiritual consciousness to humanity, and because humanity has a huge impact on the other species. So that's a beginning point. Just like not just giving charity to a drunkard or an alcoholic or somebody that has a drug addiction. I just use it for that. So that then just, you know, clean them up, and you know, but without consciousness of the soul, it's not sustainable. They'll just go back to the modes of nature and karma, because the stain of karma is there. The stain of the modes of nature is there. Philanthropy and humanitarianism isn't going to address that. It has to go to the platform of the soul. And then, so what's the soul? So those same people, try it and see what happens. Same people, you know, ask. Doesn't go beyond humanitarianism and philanthropy. I don't know what you're talking about. Ask them if they accept the soul, and ask them what the soul is. And then you can show them, well, that's interesting. Here's what it says in Bhagavad Gita. Oh, that's interesting. So with that as a foundation, then we can extricate the soul from its implication in matter. That's charity. Something else? This was your question. You want to go further with the question or some other aspect of it?
Thank you, Maharaj. Actually, I had one more question. How important is to say outside of devotees temple, doing humanitarian service? For example, if he say here some calamity has taken place, how important is to serve?
I answered that question. Not so long ago. Anyway, it happens from time to time in different places. Not so long ago, something in Nepal. So, I was very active in. I found out who's doing what, because you give to the wrong person and they don't necessarily use it wisely and well. So, at least what I did is I found out who's doing things wisely and well. And encourage people, give to this place. And here's a way that they don't take something for wire transfer. There's different ways of doing it, so the machinery of how the movements of money in the world, they reach their hand in less. then once it's there, how it will get used best. We do those things because rebuilding homes and rebuilding lives, it's something that we do, but we want to put it in the hands of somebody that will use it well, and at the same time, give Krishna bhakti. So it's important. Those that have need to help those that are in a weaker condition. And do it wisely, where the spiritual well-being is administered as well. There's ways to do that. It just takes... be a little conscientious, and there's ways to do that. Yes?
Maharaj, in the discussion you mentioned the definition of Krishna mentioning that Sarvadharman Kartijavas.
Yes.
He says you give up all religion and surrender to me. Now, in Bhagavatam, there is a verse which is on similar lines, but a little different. It says, one who gives up one religion, tektvatsa dharmam charnam bhujam hare, vajana pakvata pate. So he falls down because of not having perfected the devotional service. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, after hearing this instruction, does his duty of fighting in that consciousness.
Yeah.
Whereas that verse seems to mention that giving up one's duty, one falls down, so... it appears like one gives up on duty. So are there like two paths to surrender? One is where you continue on your service and another you give up?
I think I understand your question. I hope you understand your question. There is karma sannyas, and that's impersonalism. Krishna is not an advocate of karma sannyas. In the beginning, Arjuna is. He wants to leave the battlefield because he sees the consequences of being a Kshatriya as very undesirable. I don't want to hold this responsibility for this and that and the other, and gives his ethical reasons. So he wants karma sannyas. And Krishna is saying no. Perform your prescribed duty. And always think of me. Now, so this other verse, it's kind of the flip side. It's just saying, it's my understanding is it's saying the same thing in reverse order. That is, the essence of what you should do is awaken your Krishna consciousness. The essence of what you should do is awaken your Krishna consciousness. And even if you can manage to surpass all of the other duties of life, if you haven't awakened your Krishna consciousness, you have a problem. So the essence is awaken your Krishna consciousness. It's not a difference, not... It's just... Maybe it's oversimplistic, but it's saying the same thing in reverse order. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. So to say sarvadharmam parityajya doesn't mean don't perform your prescribed duty. Throw it in the trash bin, just think of me. Think of me and perform your prescribed duty. And if you haven't come to that stage of awakening your love and service mood to Krishna, whatever it is that you're doing is incomplete. See, if you have some handheld device that can find that verse. Can you find that verse? The one that you're referring to. You find it, then show it to me. We'll cover it again. Anything else somebody wants to bring up while he's looking up this verse?
You have something?
No. Okay. Okay, you do. And then the little boy behind you is after you.
The question is that we are in the Krishna Consciousness Association. Some outside association also, they devotion to the Krishna. And they are asking for the donation, like as a charity. But I know that their charity, they are not using in that purpose. They are using the different fund or different...
So be discriminating.
Yeah.
As grihastha, be discriminating. It sounds like what you're asking is it okay to be discriminating? And I'm saying yes. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Chakra sadharmam charanam bhujam harir bhajan apakvo ta patetato yadi. Translation. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage, yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in his occupational duties, does not gain anything. So, okay, that's a little different. I mean, the first part is a little different. Supposing, it's something like Arjuna's question, supposing I take up this path that you're recommending, the path of devotion, and I don't complete it. I left this, and I didn't get that, so I'm nowhere. I'm neither here nor there. And, right? And Krishna's reply is, no, even if you don't complete, it's permanent. So if I take up the path of serving Hari and I don't complete it, maybe even, as it says here, I may fall down. That person has attained eternal transcendental benefit, is the message. And on the other hand, that person that hasn't engaged in service to Hari but has done so many duties very nicely, they really haven't gained anything. Meaning, it remains on the material platform. There's no spiritual gain just by doing duties. Okay. Now, your turn. Go ahead. That's okay. Any question you like is going to be okay.
So, when in the four yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga, there were no, they didn't recognize Krishna. They were just like worshipping Narayana or other demigods. But until Dwapara Yuga or Kali Yuga, they actually recognized Krishna, because Krishna appeared in Dwapara Yuga. So I was wondering why Krishna wanted to appear in Dwapara Yuga, not another.
Well, who is Krishna? Okay, what does that mean? He's the source of everything. So, source of everything means the source of Narayana, the source of Matsya, the source of Kurma, the source of every other aspect, every other manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know the example of, here's a flame. So on Diwali or Govardhan Puja or you know during the month of Damodar, we light a candle and we offer a candle or a flame to Damodar, right? You've done that? Yeah. So many candles may be lit from one candle. But each of those candles has the same power as the candle from which it was lit. So those features of Krishna that appeared in different of the four yugas, it's another candle, the same potency as the other ones. There's the one from which it came. But amongst all those candles that were lit, one of them is the original. But here's another quiz question. In every day of Brahma, there's how many cycles of the four yugas? Every day of Brahma, how many cycles of the four yugas? 1,000. 1,000. That's one day, and then he has a night, then the next day, 1,000. So the original form of Krishna appears once in every day of Brahma. So that means 999 yuga cycles take place in a day of Brahma when the original form of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, doesn't appear. In Dwarpa Yuga, other forms of Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, Vasudeva means with four arms, carrying the symbols of club, disc, conch, and lotus. Vasudeva Krishna appears in 999. But in this one that just passed, Dwarpa Yuga that just passed, Krishna leaves that forearm form, assumes a childlike two-arm form, and Vasudeva carries him to the other side of the river Jamuna and he performs his pastimes in Braja. Right? Right? So that form of Krishna that appears in Braja, that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the other 999 Dwarpa Yugas, it's Vasudeva Krishna. And then in the other parts of Dwarpa Yuga and Treta Yuga and Satya Yuga, other forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear, but they're forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're His forms. Like this candle. Walk into a room that's got many, many candles lit, and you can't tell one from the other. But one of them is the original. But Krishna in Vrindavan is that original. So kind of what your question is why doesn't just Krishna appear in all the four yugas only? But, you know, he's unlimited. He's not restricted to one form. His forms are unlimited. And he has different pastimes and different devotees with different moods of love, and he's reciprocating with those different moods of love. Sometimes his friend, sometimes his mother, sometimes his servant. So many sometimes, so many different moods. And Krishna is reciprocating with those different moods. So he appears in different forms. Like Dhruva. You know the story of Dhruva? So Dhruva, it was told by his mother, do you want a kingdom that's better than your father's father's father? Well, anything can happen. If Vishnu lets it happen, so you So he wanted to know how to find Vishnu, to ask Vishnu for that kingdom. He wanted Vishnu because he wanted a kingdom. So his mood was like that. So Vishnu came and gave him his kingdom. Different moods. Prahlad. Lord Nrsingadev, he didn't come as Krishna holding a flute. He came as half man, half lion, and ripped Hiranyakashipu to pieces. That was, you know, the mood of protecting his dear devotee Prahlad. So it's different mood, different forms, different kinds of love. Krishna is reciprocated. Okay. Yeah.
Giving charity. Yeah, I would like to hear, you know, what is the consciousness should be behind that?
The consciousness should be, well, there's different parts. Detachment from the fruit, not I'm the doer, I'm up here, they're down there, I'm going to be very kind, and I feel good about my kindness. Not that. But rather, Krishna should be pleased. Krishna has given me 4x, and I only need x. So let me very carefully consider how to use those 3x's in such a way that Krishna will be pleased and Krishna's service will be done. So then I need to know what Krishna wants. What service does Krishna want? So I consider what's pleasing to Krishna and then do that. Like this other question, all the humanitarian work, when some crisis comes or disaster comes, should we think about that? We should think about that. But do it in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. The awakening of the purpose of creation will be fulfilled. Awakening of God consciousness. Let me use that resource that Krishna has given in that way, that Krishna will be pleased. In the mood of being the instrument of Krishna's service, he's given you this facility, he's given me this facility, let me use it wisely in his service. And then finally depends upon one's faith, you know, but according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna creates faith within individuals. He's the basis and support of that faith. So you as an individual or I as an individual may wish to support with our charity such and such because we feel it's really important. So maybe, you know, the worship of the deity, or maybe building a temple, or maybe furthering the distribution of knowledge, or maybe assisting outreach activities that bring the essence of Krishna bhakti into the lives of people. Or it may be, you know, care for elderly devotees, or, you know, so I may have my particular areas that I like to, so that's that kind of discretion is fine. Natural. Knowing that it's within, you know, within an area that our great acharyas will be pleased with. Okay. Yeah. I think this will be our last question, and then we'll wind up.
Maharaj, Krishna gives a lot of instructions to Arjuna. Like, he talks about all Jnana Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, everything.
Yes.
Doing prescribed duties. So, but what are the main instructions he personally wants Arjuna to follow out of the whole knowledge he gives in Bhagavad Gita?
Well, the primary one is to surrender to him. Isn't it? 1866. Sarvadharmam Pratyaja. I've given so many instructions, and now I want you to understand that you could say it either way. They're meant to lead one to this one thing, or this one thing is in the priority position and all others are subordinate to the priority position. Dhyan, meditation. Fix your mind upon me. Dhyan, learn about me. In the mood of surrender to me, to achieve that. Subordinate your propensity to learn things to this one. That's what will help me come to the position of surrendering to Krishna. And then this, you know, even if I do all my dharmas very nicely, but I don't come to that position of surrender to Krishna. That was this verse. You wasted your time. So subordinate it to this one thing. That's the essence. I like the example of a chandelier. You know what a chandelier is? You know, like a... there's something hanging from the ceiling, but sometimes they're very ornate with crystal of, you know, different shapes and hanging. And it's, you know, the whole thing is very beautiful. But it's dependent upon hanging from one point in the ceiling. If that one point in the ceiling is not there, it's just lying on the ground and it's not very beautiful. But you hang it up and, you know, then, you know, the light that comes through the crystal and it's... Oh! So that one thing that all of the other forms of yoga or dharma are suspended by is this one thing. And they're subordinate to this one thing. Doesn't mean throw the crystal away. It means connect the crystal to the place where you hang it from. And then it's beautiful. Then its purpose is served. The purpose of knowledge and the purpose of meditation, the purpose of detached work and the purpose of everything. The purpose of prescribed duty, the purpose of sacrifice, the purpose of charity. It's all served by this one thing. It doesn't mean don't be charitable, don't fix your mind and, you know, don't do duties and don't meditate. Do them with that purpose and principle in mind. Have that one objective in all the things. Okay. Yeah.
You talked about dharma a lot, but if you actually see, right, so there are so many different types of dharma depending on where the person is.
Yes.
For that person, where the person
yes.
is in,
yes.
that, in his life.
Yes.
See, for example, you have, if you're married, if you're a grihastha, you have a kula dharma. You got to take care of your family and all that stuff. And one step, if you're a brahmachari, if you're a student, you have a dharma for that, study studios, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. So there's a layer upon layer upon layer of dharma, right? So that gives a template, like a matrix of all the, how a person should behave in different walks of life, stages of life. And that rolls up to the...
Where are we going with this? Are you headed for somewhere? What's the target?
My thing is there one some commentary about, hey, these are all the things listed in one place, and these are the examples to follow.
Yes. Srimad Bhagavatam. It's compartmentalized and it's also dispersed. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, after the whole story of Prahlad Maharaj is narrated, there's a section where chapter by chapter, Narada is instructing Yudhisthira about the orders of life. Thus it's kind of condensed and compartmentalized. Chapter on this and chapter on that. Now dispersed means there's in Srimad Bhagavatam many examples of kings, many examples of sadhus, many examples of students, many examples of the different orders of life, where it's not collected in one concentrated, because the Bhagavatam, generally speaking, is not that kind of literature. It's, you know, it's the subject matters are not in this bucket you find all about this, and in that bucket you find all about that. It's history where if one is discerning, and specifically if you're looking for Krishna, and the answer to, you know, how do I get the essence of, according to my position, how should I serve Krishna best, and the examples for that, that's what the Bhagavatam does. With the goal of absorption in Krishna. That's the goal. And it's throughout the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Are you familiar? Have you gone through sections of the Bhagavatam?
Not there at the seventh
okay.
canto, but
no, but have you gone through different, have you gone through the first canto?
Yes.
Okay. So you'll see some of that in the first canto, for sure. You know, the so many things. The Bhaktivedantas were there to give instruction to Narada when he was a little boy, and how Narada lived his life after the departure of his mother, being bitten by a serpent, and there he was just with the instructions of the Bhaktivedantas, and he lived his life that way. So different descriptions of, like, role models, as you were saying, you know, exemplars of how to live one's life this way, how to live one's life that way. The Bhagavatam is filled with it. And then the principles that make your life successful or failure, observing them. But the indication is there. Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, I think we'll end.